Some years ago, I was interviewing a man about some difficult times that he'd been through in his life, and he spoke of dark nights of the soul. What a powerful phrase, dark nights of the soul. He didn't need to explain what he was talking about. It's something I understood instantly. Hi, I'm Bernie Diamond, and it's great to be back with you again. Today we're going to take a look at some of those dark nights in your life from a different perspective. Dark nights of the soul. I wonder what that means to you. I can tell you what it means to me. There have been those nights over the years when I've lain in bed with fear racking my very being. Whether it was over a relationship issue or my job or finances, whatever it was, I could only sleep in fits and starts because in the middle of those dark nights, things seemed so bad, so hopeless, that the despair consumed my whole being. I remember one such night in a hotel when I was travelling for business back in February 1995. It was so bad that I came this close to taking my own life the next morning. I remember it as though it were yesterday. Fortunately, most of us tend not to have too many of those dark nights, but when you're in the middle of a patch of suffering in your life, they become very real. And it's no good saying to someone, well, you know, if you believed in God, everything would be fine. You wouldn't feel like that. Well, Jesus did. That night that he went into the Garden of Gethsemane to pray, we're told that he took Peter with him and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and agitated. Then he said to them, I am deeply grieved even unto death. Stay here with me. Stay awake with me. And going a little farther, he threw himself on the ground and prayed, My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not what I want, but what you want. Matthew chapter 26, verses 37 to 39. See, even Jesus was deeply grieved, even unto death. That right there is a dark night of the soul. And just as is always the case, when you're having one of those, his friends were of no use to him. I remember back to those times in my life, and God put some really, really good people around me. I thank God for them. But it seemed that nothing that they were able to do or to say could touch my soul deeply enough to make a difference. You look back on Easter, you hear the old story of Jesus' betrayal and arrest and the trials and the beatings and the crucifixion and then the resurrection, and sometimes it's easy to imagine that those things don't have anything relevant to speak into our lives for the rest of the year. We go through Easter, the ritual, but then we put it back in the cupboard and forget it for another year. But for me, somehow, knowing that God understands my suffering, not just because he's God and he knows everything, but because he's actually been in my shoes and he's lived his own dark night of the soul, well, that's a huge comfort. It means I know that I know that I know that I'm talking to a God who totally gets it, who doesn't judge me in my pain, but whose heart aches for me. And that's a huge thing. Now, I wouldn't wish a dark night like that on anyone, not even on my worst enemy, yet they're an absolute inevitability. I had the privilege and the pleasure to catch up with a man who is one of the giants in my life. He was the pastor of the first church that I attended after I became a Christian. His name's Phil. And he showed me a photo of himself as a young man. He was lying on a stretcher after a car accident in which he'd been badly burned by an exploding fuel tank. After rolling in the dirt and the dust to put out the flames, he was unconscious, bandages all over him. He hadn't been a Christian all that long, and he was telling me what it was like to be there in the hospital alone, doctors and nurses talking about whether he'd make it or not, and the septicemia that was attacking his open wounds, the skin grafts that he would need. Phil was a trained surveyor, and as he lay in that hospital bed in that dark, lonely place, a dark night of the soul, if ever there was one, he spoke of God's presence. He was thinking about the rest of his life, if he had much of it before him, and he came to the conclusion that God didn't want him to be a surveyor for the rest of his life. It was in that place that he decided to become a pastor. Now, many years on, at the retirement end of 40-plus years of pastoring, he can look back on a life in which he's touched so many people, so many lives, with the love of Christ. Those dark nights are often very important times in our lives where God can connect with us in the most amazing way, where our hearts, wounded and raw with pain, are open to receive something incredibly powerful from God. We've been traveling a bit of a journey with Job, and it was a terrible time for him. Back in the Old Testament book of Job, we see how God gave the devil permission to strip everything away from the man. He was a good guy, a righteous man who honored God in everything he did. Yet God allowed his faith to be tested by letting the devil strip away one by one each of the blessings that God had given him. His children, all his possessions, his wife, his friends, his reputation, even his health. He suffered in every sense of the word. He gets to a point finally where he says this to God, Job chapter 10 verses 1 to 4, "I loathe my life. I will give free utterance to my complaint. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say to God, 'Do not condemn me. Let me know why you contend against me. Does it seem good to you to oppress, to despise the work of your hands and favor the schemes of the wicked? Do you have eyes of flesh? Do you see as humans see?'" Pretty direct, don't you think? He's telling God exactly what he thinks and feels. He's laying his perspective right out there in front of God. I think sometimes we think that we have to sanitize it for God, that somehow before we go to God, we need to put on our Sunday best and put a smile on our face and go and tell God how rosy things are. But in the midst of those dark nights, things aren't rosy. They don't look rosy. They don't feel rosy. And putting on a false face for God is just about the dumbest thing that anyone can do. I want to encourage you in the middle of those places to pour out your heart and your soul to God. Tell him exactly what you think, exactly what you feel. I want to encourage you today that in the midst of your despair, your God is the one constant on whom you can rely. He is the one person who is faithful beyond all others. When God's judgment falls on Israel because his people have sinned against him for centuries, when he allows the city and the temple to be destroyed by the Babylonians, when God's people are taken into captivity as slaves, the writer of the Book of Lamentations is standing in the midst of this devastation, surveying the complete destruction of the great Jerusalem and the temple. But after lamenting the destruction and the loss, finally he comes to this point. This is what he says, Lamentations chapter 3, verses 20 to 26. "I thought of my affliction, and my homelessness is wormwood and gall. My soul continually thinks of it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord." With all the devastation and destruction that we see in our lives sometimes, you and I can know that the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. In fact, they're new every morning. And as your soul seeks him and waits quietly for his salvation, know this, he is doing a mighty work in you. He is doing things in you that you cannot begin to imagine. The greatest transformations of your life will almost always happen on those dark nights of the soul. And it is good for you to wait quietly for his salvation. Going on in our lives, man, it's easy just to kind of drift out of our relationship with God. You know, you just get so preoccupied with everything else, and one day you wake up and realize that your relationship with God ain't what it used to be. That's why I'd love to send you a free copy of my special edition book, How to Get Close to God. Because his word is alive and active, amen? So I'm praying that God will draw you ever closer to himself through this book. You can request your free copy right now at ChristianityWorks.com. You'll see that offer right there toward the top of the homepage. Just click on it, pop in your name and email, and that e-booklet will be on its way to your inbox in just seconds. That web address again is ChristianityWorks.com. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Bernie Diamond, and I'll catch you again same time tomorrow with a different perspective.